Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen, and today I am joined by Jared Feinberg. What is it that you do, Jared, on the mean internet streets? What's your claim to fame?
I am a NFL draft analyst on Twitter, and also run the top Carolina Panther amateur analysts on Twitter. So pretty much what I do is give my opinions on draft prospects. I do rankings and like show clips of a certain prospect's play or whatnot. And for the Panthers, I just give out my opinion. And it's mostly biased, but I can be unbiased sometimes. But, you know, sometimes my bias side can turn people the wrong way. So,
right. Yeah. Well, what do you, how long have you been a Panthers fan? Is it like your whole life thing or what?
Pretty much when I started watching football, about 5-6 years ago. And like as soon as it got to football, I want to know everything about something, and like as soon as I started watching football, like the Panthers were a team like, hey, they're in the Carolinas, I'm from Carolina, why not start following the Panthers? And I pretty much know almost everything about from the start of the franchise when it was first founded to right now. And also, like, draft-wise, the NFL draft, I started doing that probably around the same time I started watching football. And I've just been hooked to it for quite a while. And couple years ago, I started doing my own scouting reports for prospects like Leonard Fournette or Christian McCaffrey. So, yeah, that's basically how I became a Panthers fan and a NFL draft analyst.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that sounds great, man. So, like, where can people find? Do you do any writing online? Can people find you on a blog or on a certain website?
They can find me, I work for a website, ZachTimeFantasy.com. It's ran by, a young kid my age, around 17, 18 years old. We're a growing website. We're trying to get more, articles out there so we can produce more content to show people. And you can also find me on Twitter at JRodDraftScout.
Awesome. All right, so before we get to some Panthers talk today, I just generally kind of like to talk about some of the big news that's kind of come out on this Monday, and that is that Lev Bell doesn't seem to, there won't be a long-term contract done with him. What do you think about that kind of situation right now and the fact that running backs can't really seem to be paid the same that wide receivers and QBs are right now?
Well, I believe that RBs or running backs are a huge part of being a successful football team. That's the mindset I kind of have if I was starting a football team. Like, I need a good running back that can run in between the tackles, can catch out of the backfield, can make a guy make a guy miss in open space, and can just run away from you. Le'Veon Bell, like, he's not the type of running back that's going to run away from you, but he is such a patient running back, and that kind of helps to his advantage because he's patient. He's trying to find a way to, like, find an open hole. As soon as he sees a hole open, he just accelerates. And he also plays like a number two wide receiver. He's a pretty good wide receiver if he were to play the position. Very good hands. Route running is very good. Like, he's one of the best running backs out of the backfield. But anyway, yeah, well, I do believe running backs are a huge part of a successful football team. This is a quarterback's league.
Right.
Teams are throwing the ball more than ever before. I think that has a big effect on how big-time running backs are paid these days. Like, you're not going to see David Johnson get paid in the future probably like $100 million. Like, that's probably what Le'Veon Bell's wanting. And I think that's something we're about to talk about, am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you think an optimal Le'Veon Bell contract looks like for him?
I would have to say 5 years, $90 to $95 million. I think that's probably the right price for him if he's wanting to be paid like one of the, or to be paid as the best running back in the league. That's best running back in the league money. And that's easily one of the biggest or the biggest contract for any running back in NFL history. But then you have to factor in wanting to be paid like a number two wide receiver. So then the money goes up into the $100 million range, which is right around where QBs are being paid nowadays. You're seeing guys like Jimmy Garoppolo, Kirk Cousins. Like, you're seeing a bunch of those guys getting paid in the $100 million range. And I don't think the Steelers were really wanting to pay that much for a running back. And probably back, if we had the salary cap, or if we had the salary cap like we did today, back in like the 80s or the 90s, we would probably see Barry Sanders with a $100 million contract, because back then running backs were more valued than quarterbacks, in my opinion. But still, today, teams are throwing the ball a lot more than they ever have before. This is a passing league. Hasn't really, there are maybe three or four, maybe five teams in the entire NFL that runs the ball more than they throw the ball. So that's something to think about.
Yeah, for sure. I think you're absolutely right. Where do you think Le'Veon Bell, I think it's likely that he ends up in free agency. Where do you think he ends up in 2019? And then I have kind of a interesting game for us to play.
You know, I honestly don't know. I think it's just a wait and see right now. We're just going to have to wait and see what happens in probably February, early March, right before free agency starts. Maybe the Steelers could try to pitch out a last-ditch effort to keep Le'Veon Bell. But right now, I'd have to say either Indianapolis or Cleveland, despite them drafting two running backs that could end up being the week one starters, and Jordan Wilkins, their rookie running back from Ole Miss, and Nick Chubb from Georgia, who at one point in his career was considered a Heisman Trophy candidate. But it's just, like I said, it's just going to be a wait and see right now.
Right. All right. So here is what I have for you. I think that a route the Steelers could go that I don't think a lot of people are talking about is a Le'Veon Bell trade. What do you think about that?
Well, one team's going to have to give up a bunch. One team's probably going to have to give up their future for the next 2 years or so.
Right.
And I was talking to a couple of my colleagues about this, about what the trade value is for Le'Veon Bell. For me, I think Le'Veon Bell's the best running back in the league. And so the trade value there is just through the roof. And you'd probably want maybe two first-rounders, possibly a second for, and possibly a future second for Le'Veon Bell. I would probably include possibly a running back in the trade, another running back for exchange, but like the price for Le'Veon Bell is just going to be too high. I don't see any team in need of a running back willing to give up that much in trade value, and especially giving up a couple of future first rounders and a future second rounder. Like that'd just be too much for a team in the future. And what if the team starts to crumble over the next 2 years or something? Like a team in need of a running back starts crumbling, and you don't have two future first round picks and plus a second, you're not going to have the ability to draft a top-notch player in future drafts. So then you're relying on hopefully signing decent players in free agency, so then you can at least get through those couple years without a couple first-rounders, and then you can start the rebuilding process there.
All right, so here's this game that I have. You're going to be the Steelers front office, and I will be four teams that are going to offer you trades. You tell me if you accept it, you decline it, or maybe we can negotiate some sort of deal. But are you down for that?
Sure.
Awesome. Okay. So first, the Seahawks are going to come knocking, and here's what the Seahawks are going to offer you. Pittsburgh, you're in need of a safety. What about Earl Thomas for Le'Veon Bell plus a second rounder this year and a second and a third next year?
Ooh. Now, that's a good trade. I think
maybe the Steelers have to throw us back a conditional seventh rounder.
I'm sorry?
And let's say the Steelers also have to throw us back a conditional seventh rounder.
I would definitely take that trade. You put Earl Thomas on that Steelers defense with a healthy Ryan Shazier, assuming he comes back fully healthy and is able to recover from the horrendous injury he suffered last year. Assuming Ryan Shazier comes back, and you still got Cameron Hayward, Bud Dupree, possibly Artie Burns. You put Earl Thomas on that defense. That defense is going to excel very well. I'd be willing to give up Le'Veon Bell for Earl Thomas, who is going to be a future Hall of Famer. And Earl Thomas is still playing at a high level as he gets closer to his 30s. Yeah, of course. I'd accept that trade any day.
All right. Let's move on to this round two. We're one for one so far. So round two. So the Lions call you up. And the Lions offer you Kerryon Johnson, LeGarrette Blount, a first rounder, and a second rounder for Le'Veon Bell, and a sixth rounder.
Now, that's another tough one. I would have to say the only thing I'd be okay with is you take LeGarrette Blount out of that and then get Kerryon Johnson, and then what? For the draft picks, a first rounder and a second rounder?
Yeah, a first and a second.
I mean, I'd be willing to take it.
Right. All right. So we're two for two. That's always a great place to be as far as predicted trades that I have. I kind of like running through these scenarios in my head. I have fun with it. The third one, this one might be tougher, but I think it's an intriguing trade. The Vikings call you up and they say, we will give you Dalvin Cook, our extremely promising running back, But we get he's coming off an ACL, so for security, we'll give you a second and a third round pick, the second from this year and the third from next year. What do you think about that trade?
I'm going to have to decline that one because I really love the potential Dalvin Cook, and I think he can become one of the best running backs in the league in maybe a year or two, assuming he stays healthy. I think he's going to be a big part of the Minnesota Vikings over the next 4 to 5 years if he ends up staying with the Vikings long term. That offense with now Kirk Cousins, you finally have a quarterback to lead that offense, like a quarterback that's willing to get you over the top. Like, I understand they had Case Keenum last year, but Kirk Cousins puts you over the top. I think they need Dalvin Cook to also help with that by putting them over the top. And Dalvin Cook was on pace to having a really good rookie year. Like, he could have been challenging Alvin Kamara, or he would have beaten Alvin Kamara for Rookie of the Year or Offensive Rookie of the Year had he stayed healthy.
So I guess I don't understand why, as the Steelers front office, you're turning that trade down.
Like, I understand Le'Veon Bell is the best running back in the league, but I'd stick with the potential. I'd stick with the talent that you have in Dalvin Cook, and Dalvin Cook's potential is...
Right, but you're not Minnesota in this scenario.
Right.
You would take Le'Veon Bell over Dalvin Cook, keeping in mind that Dalvin Cook still has 2 years left on his contract, so you can still wait a year, and then you can do the same thing you did with Cook with Bell. With Cook.
Yeah, it is a tough one, but, as seeing it from the Steelers' front office point of view, I respect that Dalvin Cook could potentially be one of the best running backs in the future. And maybe I'm hoping that I could work out a deal trying to keep Le'Veon Bell in Pittsburgh. That's kind of what I'm hoping for in this scenario.
All right. I would have taken that trade, but all right. The final trade we have here, the Packers. The Packers call up, and I have two separate trade offers for you. The first is we have two first-round picks next year. I'll give you, let's say this trade, I'm assuming all these trades are being made around between week 4 and week 8. So, because I feel like if the Steelers were to trade, they'd want to see what kind of value draft picks would be, you know? So, I will trade you, Green Bay would trade you their higher first-round pick out of theirs and the Saints, plus Aaron Jones and a third, a fourth, and a fifth rounder this year for Le'Veon Bell.
I think the asking price is perfect for the price that we have for Le'Veon Bell. It's perfect. Two first rounders in exchange for a running back, plus a couple more picks. I think that's a perfect trade. I'm willing to accept that trade.
Oh, no. I only give you one first round.
Oh, one first round. My bad.
Plus Aaron Jones, and who is extremely young and talented and promising, and then those three later round picks. Or the counteroffer is this. Le'Veon Bell for the two first-round picks straight up, but none of the later-round picks and no Aaron Jones.
I'm willing to take the second offer.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't think the Packers would do that, but if, like, I don't know. I don't know. I could see him, like, being right around contention, like, around week six or seven, and Brian Gutekunst just kind of says, all right, we got to keep Aaron Rodgers happy. We got to try to win him a Super Bowl. Let's give up what we have this year and take, even if we can't re-sign Bell, let's take out a loan and let's see if we can get this thing to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can just imagine Aaron Rodgers with Le'Veon Bell. They finally, and if they lose Aaron Rodgers to injury again, I think Le'Veon Bell would even help them make the playoffs still.
Yeah, absolutely. And you
because how valuable Le'Veon Bell is and how good he is.
Yeah, absolutely. And you think about it, Aaron Rodgers hasn't had an elite running game behind him since Eddie Lacy was in his rookie year. Really?
Exactly.
So, I don't know. I like all those trades. That you can find that piece with all those trades and some other analysis on ProSportsFandom.com. My colleagues didn't really like that much, but I mean, I thought that they were all pretty okay trades at least. But, you know, it is what it is. So let's move on to why we have you on, man. Hey, thanks for playing along with all the Lev Bell talk.
No problem.
Awesome. All right, let's talk a little bit about your beloved Carolina Panthers, and let's start with Cam Newton. Cam Newton, okay, I think this podcast, I'll just give you an overview of who our audience is. Our audience is more like football fans who know their football, and that's why this more than other shows is more just purely football. So we're going to jump in. We all know that Cam Newton's one of the better quarterbacks in the league. But if you look at his statistics, the way he goes is really great year, really bad year. Really great year, really bad year. And I formed this question off of that, but I was looking at his stats a little bit right before we started. And over the past few years, he's been kind of in decline statistically, at least throwing the ball. Do the stats speak to the performances, in your opinion?
I honestly not sure. But here's the thing. I think the system that he was in last year or the past couple years has just been really inconsistent. Like, they had, I don't know what kind of offense the Panthers were running the past 2 years, because I wasn't seeing the offense that I saw in 2015 the last 2 years, of course. Like, in 2015, that offense was absolutely incredible. Cam Newton threw for 30-plus touchdowns, only threw 10 interceptions, threw for 3,700 yards. His top receiver, though, wide receiver, of course, was Ted Ginn Jr. And also his tight end, Greg Olsen, went to another Pro Bowl. Caught for over 1,000 yards receiving. But, like, the last 2 years, like, it's just a lot of inconsistency from the offense. And, like, I won't have to put the blame mostly on bad offensive line play past year or so, minus Andrew Norwell and maybe Trey Turner. And also, Mike Shula. Mike Shula, he thought, like, oh, I can keep going with this offense after 2015. After 2015, the Panthers' offense was very predictable, and it was still very predictable last year. Like, the type of running, like, they were having Christian McCaffrey run in between the tackles, which he really isn't.
He's not that guy.
You're supposed to have him go outside, like on outside zone plays, where he can get to the edge on the tackle or off the tackle. That's probably Jonathan. That'd probably be like CJ Anderson's job this year, would be to run in between the tackles. Like, Christian McCaffrey can't do that. He's more of an all-around, can go, he's like outside or just barely in between the tackles, you know? And I think this year, Cam Newton, I think he finally has an offense that he's like, okay, I can probably get somewhere with this offense. I can finally get to maybe where I was in 2015. Maybe I can even go further and be the type of player I was as a passer in my rookie year when I threw for 4,000 yards. You look at this offense for Carolina on paper, a lot of talent. You got Devin Funchess. You got rookie DJ Moore, Torrey Smith, a lot of potential in Curtis Samuel, Jarius Wright, who is a great third down conversion specialist, and a burner out to Demary Byrd, who in the preseason last year and also in the regular season showed some promise. And also, not to mention, you still got Olsen, you got Christian McCaffrey, and then you got CJ Anderson, who's playing on the team on a one-year deal when you'd expect a guy who just ran 4,000 yards, he'd probably want like a 3 or 4 year, $20, $30 million deal. No, he decided to come Carolina on just like a 1 year cheap deal. Like, that's pretty good. But I think I think Cam Newton is going to have to hope that, just like, on paper, you look on, like I said, it's a talented group, but now you got to look at the offensive line. Can he be protected by that offensive line? I think North Turner has to think about, like, how he's going to use Cam Newton with the offensive line he has, because you don't have Andrew Norwell anymore. He's in Jacksonville. So your left side of the offense is very questionable because Matt Khalil struggled last year and they couldn't cut him during the offseason because it would have cost them a bunch of money. You got competition for at left guard, but from center to the right side, it looks pretty solid. You got Ryan Khalil, Trey Turner, and then All-Pro Darrell Williams, which, by the looks of it, the right side, that's going to be fine. I mean, Cam would be fine unless he was a lefty. I mean, but he's not. So, Cam Newton, I think a lot of his potential to have a big season rests on hoping that North Turner can develop him into a really good quarterback that everyone expects him to be. I think he's a really good quarterback. I think he's a top five quarterback in this league. So, yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, that's a lot of information about the offense all at once. Let's try to synthesize that really quickly. And let's start with the running backs. And a question I have for you is, what is the running back situation going to look like this year? Obviously, with Christian McCaffrey, who didn't do great running the football last year, but was very promising in the offense in general. And pairing that with CJ Anderson, a guy who, I'm a Denver Broncos fan. He's been just fantastic for me the past couple of years. As a Broncos fan, I just saw him tear it up, and I just really want to know, like, how do you think the running back scenario is going to work out this year in Carolina?
I think it's going to work out pretty well. The way I see it is, it's going to be almost like it was last year, but better, with Christian McCaffrey and John Stewart. Now you got McCaffrey and CJ Anderson, who's a younger version of Jonathan Stewart, and I think a better version of Jonathan Stewart, to be honest with you. I think CJ Anderson, he's going to be more of the goal line, maybe like short yardage type of back. Some say he might end up rushing for 1,000 yards, but I think the way it's going to be, McCaffrey's going to be the starter, and he's probably in the going to have like a 1,300-1,400 yards from scrimmage type of season. I see C.J. Anderson maybe rushing for 600, 700 yards. I think, like, the way they're going to use McCaffrey is they're going to throw to him, of course. He's going to be a big-time weapon for Panthers offense. I can see him probably having at least 70 or 80 catches next season. And maybe 400, 500 yards receiving. He's going to get some big plays, big chunk yardage plays next year. They're probably going to run a lot of, if you play Madden and you know, like, the trap and the wham plays, I think they're going to run sort of those kind of plays with McCaffrey. And I think they're going to run more like power and zone plays with C.J. Anderson, who's more in between the tackles, while McCaffrey is more of like guards pulling, like just like moving them out of the way and then just like trying to make a hole for McCaffrey, you know. I think they're going to run a lot of tosses with McCaffrey since he is so good in open space. I think he can turn like a 2-yard loss into like a 7-yard gain from just making one guy miss, and he's off to the races.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's move on to the receiving core really quickly. You obviously mentioned a lot of great names that that the Panthers have. Let me just run over some of them. Devin Funchess, who, while he may not be the biggest play guy, he's one of Cam Newton's favorite targets, and he's a crucial part of that offense. Then you have guys like Jarius Wright, who's a depth guy but who can still provide you those yards after catch. You look at DJ Moore, who they drafted. Some people said he was the best wide receiver in this draft. And then you add Torrey Smith over from the Eagles to give you that deep threat, which is really something the Panthers didn't have last year. Now, all that being said, here's a hot take I have for you, and I think that I want your input on it. I think that the success and failure of this passing game comes down to one person, and that person is Greg Olsen. Because if Greg Olsen, again, he came back last year from that foot injury, and he really did struggle. He struggled a lot coming back from that foot injury. I believe if he continues to struggle with that foot injury, that really hurts the offense because of the way he's able to open up the middle of the field and draw the safeties in to create those deep threats for your outside wide receivers.
I'm about 50-50 with you on there. Like, I do see a little bit of, tiny bit of decline in Olsen, but I think he can still run routes really well. He might not be as fast as he was because of the foot injury, but he's still very reliable in the red zone. He can, of course, draw the safeties away from the deep threats. I think his first full game back, I believe it was against Green Bay, he had close to 10 catches for 100 or so yards and a touchdown. Like, he can still produce big numbers, but at the same time, you gotta consider his health. Can he stay healthy? And if he can't, I think the Panthers got lucky in the draft by drafting his potential successor in Indiana tight end Ian Thomas. Ian Thomas, from what a lot of scouts have said, is that he could potentially be the next Antonio Gates. Like, physique-wise, like, his physical nature, he looks like Antonio Gates. I think the concern with Ian Thomas in the draft last year was his route running. And I think that's something he just needs to work on over the next couple of years while he waits for Olsen to hang up the cleats. But if Olsen does go down, I believe the Panthers will be... I don't think they'll have the success as they did with Olsen, because Olsen is obviously one of the top tight ends in the league. But Ian Thomas can still draw away those safeties and can create those deep passes for Cam Newton.
Right. Absolutely. So, I guess, yeah, it doesn't come down for me, because I'm with you. I'm not questioning his ability to stay healthy so much as I just think my take is more he is such a crucial piece to that offense that I think without him, that offense goes from potentially one of the best receiving cores in the division, which is saying a lot, seeing as Atlanta has just, I think, the deepest wide receiving core in the entire league. And to one of the more mediocre groups in the league. I just think that he is the cog in that offense. It's not necessarily how Cam Newton performs. It's how Greg Olsen performs, in my opinion, at least. All right.
I totally agree with your opinion.
Awesome. So, we like it when people agree. It's also good to disagree. Creates good content. Let's move on. That was an awful transition. The defense. Let's talk about the defense. And I know from your talk on the offense that you have so much to put, but let's go round by round here. Let's start with the defensive line. The Panthers lost Starlu Talele. I'm a big Utah guy, so my view on Lutalele is a little bit biased. I get his stats aren't necessarily up there with some of the best in the league, but I think he's one of the best run stoppers in the league. Are you worried about the impact that losing him is going to have on the defense?
I'm not really that concerned. Well, yes, I kind of agree that, Lutalele was probably one of the best run stoppers in the league. But the Panthers this offseason added one of the better run stoppers in the league, and Dontari Poe, who's a former Pro Bowler. I believe he played for Kansas City, or he started his career in Kansas City, played well for Kansas City as a nose tackle. Came to Atlanta for a couple of years or a year, and he played well for them last year. And this year he's with K'Juan Short, one of the best defensive tackles in the league, probably top three defensive tackle. And he's also got pass rushers like Mario Addison and Julius Peppers coming off the edge. I don't think the Panthers' run defense in terms of the front four, I don't think it's really a concern, because, of course, you just added Poe, who's a gap eater, and he's big. He's a big boy. He's like 6'3", 340 at least. He's a big dude, and he's going to, swallow running backs whole. He is going to destroy your run game. You try running up the middle. I was going to just, come through the offensive line and just swallow your running back.
Right. Are you worried a little bit about the age of this defensive line? Because I was writing this article. I'm writing these previews for the site I write for, kind of the inspiration behind this too, because I always love the input of people who watch week in and week out. And I watch every game on Game Pass, but I know that's not the same as seeing it in real time and devoting your week to just seeing everything unfold. Sorry, that was a bad explanation and a bit rambling. But the defensive line between Julius Peppers, who it's a miracle that guy's still playing at this point in his career, Dontari Poe and Mario Addison, I believe I did the math, it's something like 32 combined, they are 32 years old as far as years of experience go. Does the age of this offensive line and the fact they might be slowing down a little bit concern you?
Well, yes, I agree that the defensive line is aging. But if you saw last year, like, of course, yeah, they were aging last year, of course. But the production they put up was incredible. This year, I expect probably the same as last year with Peppers and Mario Addison. I can see both of them getting 10-plus sacks again this year. And Peppers was just playing as a rotational player. And then later on in the season, he was the starter. He still got 11 sacks as more of a rotational player. And that's pretty damn good. Mario Addison, full-on starter, is a monster on third downs. Like, third down pass rush, it's third and 15, and the offense is trying to get a big play downfield. Addison's just going to ruin that day for you. I'm not really that concerned with the age of Peppers and Addison. As long as they can produce like they did last year, I expect the front four to be just as good and just as fine as it was last year.
Yeah. All right. All right. Let's move on to the next kind of position group. I have a statement here, and you tell me true or false. When they are all healthy, which admittedly is rarely, the Panthers have the best linebacking core in the league.
Easily. Agree.
So talk to me a little bit more about the linebackers, I guess. Like, what makes them so talented?
I think the one guy that makes that group, or the two guys that makes that group linebackers so talented, is Thomas Davis, who's been on that team since 2004. He's ageless. He doesn't look like he's losing a step at all, despite tearing his ACL three times for three straight years, tore his ACL, and comes back, and he's one of the best linebackers in the league. And then you got Luke Kuechly, who's probably the best linebacker in the league, and I think he is easily. Yes, over Bobby Wagner. I think Kuechly and Davis, they bring their football IQ together, and it just makes that whole group better. Kuechly and Davis, they're getting guys in positions to know, they know where the play is going. Kuechly already knows what the play is before the offense snaps the ball. He and Davis are trying to get everyone to where the ball's going to be. Like, and from what I've seen on Twitter, Instagram, whatever, like comments about Luke Kuechly, there's like players that play on offense, they're like, Kuechly already knows our plays before we even snap the ball. Like, it's like you don't see a linebacker that knowledgeable and with an IQ like that. And I don't think we've seen a linebacker like Luke Kuechly in probably since Ray Lewis. Like, he is that good. And I think both Davis and Kuechly make Shaq Thompson the player he is. I think Shaq Thompson is in line, because of Davis' suspension, I think he's in line to be one of the best linebackers at his position as 4-3 outside linebacker. He is very fast to the ball. He's great in coverage. He can cover your tight ends and running backs all the way downfield. Your running back runs a wheel route, he's with the running back the whole way. Your tight end runs a vert down the field, he's with the tight end the whole way. Like, he can probably line up one-on-one with a receiver, slot receiver. He is that athletic, he is that talented, and I think Shaq Thompson has, of course, that potential to be one of the best linebackers in the league after Davis retires, but he makes that linebacker core complete with his athleticism, and I think he looks more like Thomas Davis in his prime as a guy who's not even hit 25 yet.
Awesome. So, outside of those three guys, tell me about a guy who doesn't get as much national media coverage who might really break out this year.
On the defensive side of the ball or at linebacker?
At linebacker.
I wanted to say Shaq. Because...
outside of Shaq Thompson, though. Because I believe there's...
oh, outside of Shaq
Thompson. I think there's other depth outside of Shaq Thompson for sure. I look at three specific guys that I really want to know a little bit more about. I look at Jared Norris, and I look at the rookie Andre Smith. What do you think about both those guys? Or who do you think is going to have a better career of both those guys?
I think Andre Smith because he's younger. He's got a lot more potential. I've seen him play at North Carolina. Of course, like, he was drafted in the seventh round. I mean, he's not one of the best defensive prospects in
right.
He wasn't one of the best defensive prospects, but he is a very solid linebacker. He brings depth to a really good linebacking core. And, like, I think learning from Davis and Kuechly and Shaq, I think that's going to help him tremendously. And I think in a few years, once Thomas Davis retires, and crazy as it might sound, Kuechly, hope he does stay healthy, but if he doesn't, isn't able to, and he ends up dying out in the league, like he's not playing in the league anymore, I think Andre Smith can come in and be more like a John Beeson when John Beeson was playing for the Carolina Panthers before Kuechly was on the team. I think Smith kind of has that potential, but right now he provides really good depth, and I can't wait to see what he has this preseason when he gets his opportunity to play in front of maybe 20,000 fans at least, because who cares about
it's,
preseason?
It's the
games.
Preseason. Oh, I'm deep into the preseason. I'm a big preseason guy. I've always been.
Like, I'll be hyped for, like, the first preseason game, which is the Hall of Fame game, but...
No. I feel that. Like, every single year without fail, I wake up on the day of a Hall of Fame game, and I'm like, oh, my God, football's back. I'm so ready. Let's do this. And then I get, like, half a quarter into the Hall of Fame game, and I remember, oh, this is the Hall of Fame game. And then I get really excited for the preseason, and there are just more games, so I always get really excited about a bunch of first quarters in the month of August. So, yeah, that's where I stand with the preseason. I think I know people want to do away with it, but I would never do away with it. I love watching preseason football because you see guys that you wouldn't normally see too, and there's just a lot of stuff that's going on, and you can learn a lot from the preseason, I think. Not necessarily about the regular season, but more about the build-up and aspects of the certain teams' rosters, which, speaking of which, is a nice segue to our final kind of position group to talk about here, the secondary. I look at this secondary, and to me it went from a prime secondary in the league, from hosting Josh Norman, to really going down and becoming the, I think, one of the most confusing secondaries in the league. When I look at this secondary, I just think it's a mess, and I'm really confused at what's good about it, what's bad about it. Can you walk me kind of through the starting secondary lineup and piece by piece tell me what you have faith in and what you're concerned about? And am I in the right mindset to be concerned about this secondary?
Here's the thing, I'm going to be completely honest with you. I kind of agree with you that it's just really confusing. The secondary is a mess. But I will start off by saying this. James Bradbury is easily probably the best defender on that football team. And that's saying a lot. Because after James Bradbury, who else in that secondary is good? Maybe Mike Adams. He's been solid. But James Bradbury He showed a lot of potential last year and showed a lot of flashes of being potentially a really good corner. I think James Bradberry is inching his way to being, like, the path he's been on kind of reminds me on the path that Xavier Rhodes was at the start of his career, because Xavier Rhodes really didn't get going until, like, his third season. Now, I'm not saying James Bradberry is going to be the next Xavier Rhodes. No. I think James Bradberry can be at least a top 12, top 10 corner. Like, he can be recognized by league, by the entire league. Like, he has the potential to shut down an entire portion of the field. So, the first-string quarterback position, CB1, that's sealed. CB2, opposite of James Bradberry. You got a battle between Kevon Seymour and free agent pickup Ross Crockwell. You would favor the veteran Ross Crockwell, who was one of the best zone defenders in the league last year for the New York Giants. And the Panthers defense sort of have, like, it's a zone defense, so Crockwell will easily fit there as their second corner. But then you gotta look at Kevon Seymour, who's young, he's hungry, he wants to play. And I'm gonna be honest with you, Kevon Seymour played better than Darryl Worley last year when he was on the field. Kevon Seymour